Welcome to another episode of the BPB podcast. We're so happy you're here with us. And today we have an awesome guest. I'm really excited to introduce you to Anthony Ritchie. Check it out. He is currently an active duty member in the U.S. Navy. Anthony and his wife, Amira, share three beautiful kids and reside in Virginia. Anthony and his wife also are the founders of Strong Homes Properties, where they manage multifamily residential properties. And he's also the podcast host of Rich State of Mind, where he interviews entrepreneurs and business owners on the topics of wealth building, positivity, budgeting. We're going to get into that. Pursuing your passion and dreams, along with discussing the journey and vision of success. So welcome. Yay.
Hey, I love that intro. It's great.
We're really happy you're here. This is going to be so fun. Yeah. I have so many questions.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm definitely happy to be here. So go away with the questions.
I'm excited because we're going to be talking about real estate. We're going to be talking about multifamily properties. And these are things that I'm passionate about. And coming from marketing online, a lot of people forget that sometimes you just need to diversify. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like a lot of people who are marketing online, they forget, okay, well, you know, I'm making money online, but what do I do? And they reinvest online. Don't think about, well, what else could I be doing with my money? And it's, for me, it's always been a good idea to look outside of the industry that you're in and say, okay, well, what other industries can you be investing in? And real estate has always been a good investment. Now, there are quite a few questions that I want to get into.
Okay.
But first,
I haven't seen Rory this excited in a really long time. Seriously, this is going to be so fun.
The first question I want to ask you is, like, how did you even get into this? Like, why are we even talking about you doing real estate and multifamily? And then how are you even doing that while you're an active member of the military?
Okay. So I'll talk about how the seed got planted for real estate investing. It started with me wanting to get my finances in order, period. I realized that I was at a point in my life where I was like, I make good money, but why don't I feel like I make good money? And so it caused me to want to look at my finance, how I was spending my money. Why was I having to use my credit card and cover certain expenses or things that I wanted to do? So this is when YouTube was definitely starting to blow up a bit. I was looking on YouTube about budgeting. And obviously the first person that's going to show was Dave Ramsey. So he had his baby steps. So I started to follow it with me and my ex-wife and my son at the time. We honed in, and for 3 years, I paid off all my debt, all of our debt, $55,000. And so it was a lot of sacrifice. I traded in one of our cars. I bought a hoopty and fixed it up from scratch. Like, I went to the dealership and I told the guy, like, hey, tell me everything that's wrong with the car and then tell me what needs to get done today, that if I try to drive home, I'm going to crash and burn. So he told me everything I needed to get fixed for that day. And I was like, all right, I'll go back to you or find some other cheaper way and we'll do it based off of, you know, priority that you had listed for me. So just doing that for 3 years and being really patient. But then I thought, Dave Ramsey's thing was, hey, when you want to buy a house, you need to buy it in cash. I'm like, at the time I lived in Los Angeles. I was like, it'll take me forever to buy a $700,000 home. And this was like a 3-bedroom, 1-bath.
Yeah. Right.
Right. With an avocado tree. So I'm like, there's got to be another way. So the next thing that would pop up, thanks to Google, right? It figures out the things that you're looking for. I try to type in how to make, and then a passive income shows up as the rest of the sentence. So I click on it. And then they talk about YouTube, talk about peer-to-peer lending, and then real estate came up. At that time, my interest got peaked. So at the same time, I had a coworker who used his VA loan to buy a quadruplex in LA. It was down in the South Central. What really attracted me to the idea of real estate was the fact that he was house hacking before I even knew house hacking was a thing. And I think this is even before it started being on social media. He lived in one unit, renovated the other three. And it was enough to where he was paying his mortgage and then some. And at this point, this is like 2013, right? So this is when the economy is still recovering. A cat could have made choices on what stocks to pick and what properties to pick. And you would have probably increased a great return on your investment. So this is what this guy did. He bought a property in the area. And then in 9 months, it literally went up in value like 90 grand. It was crazy. Hmm. So I'm like, not only I can get a house that goes up in equity, it could cash flow, and I could live for free. This sounds awesome. So I had analysis paralysis for about 5 years. actually saving up, really trying to, I got stuck with the Dave Ramsey thought process to save up, put my money aside into other things versus obviously taking a lot of risk because I have been conditioning myself, no debt, no debt, no debt. But then I realized like, you know, there is such thing as a good debt or a good risk. Obviously you don't want to do too much, right? Because you put yourself in a bind. So I didn't do my first deal until 2019 where I did a VA, I used my VA loan. And for us that serve in the military or have served in the military, we can do our, use our VA loan. I'm not going to say no money down. There's no such thing as no money down, but because there's other things you have to pay for, but essentially I'm not even putting 5% down. I'll say that on whatever home I bought. I was blessed with this, with a triplex. It was a triplex that I bought. I was blessed to buy the triplex because the seller, who was a real estate agent and an investor himself, understood that I was a new investor. And so when it came to certain things that I needed to be done, he would explain to my agent, hey, these are the things I'm going to do. Case in point, he had a HVAC that was apparently the copper had been stolen out of the HVAC because people sell that for drugs, whatever the case may be. And he bought a whole new HVAC for me in order to help me close the deal.
Wow. And
all I had to do was make sure that the standalone garage appraised, because when they, with the appraisal for VA loans is very strict. And even though the standalone garage was not obviously a part of the house and nobody was living in it, it still had to pass the appraisal. So I had to get a new roof on that. And I also had to put new shingles on the house. So I did, me and my father did the shingles on the side of the house. And that's how old this standalone's got, like shingles, not even regular siding. And then the roof, and this is what a lot of people don't know that you could do. The roof was done before we closed. And a way I was able to do that is called, it's called concessions, where the I'm able to get a contractor to do work on it based off the equity that's left in the house. So the house was worth appraised for $145. I bought it from the owner for $139. The contractor charged me $6,000. So I used the $6,000 gap of equity to get the house fixed before we close. And then that's, and then we cut him the check at closing. So a lot of people don't know that. And I think it's also because there's some states that doesn't allow you to do that. And so we did it, you know, for in our state, and it really helped me out my first deal. I learned from the 1% rule. So that's what kind of attracted me to this triplex, because the total rents was like $2,000 at the time. And I was only buying it for $139. Well, after closing $145, so it was over the 1% rule, and the rents were grossly under the market. So the 3-bedroom was only for $950, but I could bump that up to $1,100. The 2-bedroom was at $600, but I could bump that up to $855. And then the studio apartment was only at $400, and I knew I could get that to $500. So I saw an ability to increase my rents by at least $500 a month. Mm-hmm. Which times that by 12, $6,000. So $6,000 income or increase on top of what's already there. And then the mortgage is underneath $1,000. So it looked like a decent win.
Wow. That's amazing.
How I got started.
It makes me excited because my husband and I talk all the time about different types of investments. We bought our house out here in Colorado with a VA loan. Same thing, barely had to put anything down. The VA loan is the biggest blessing to be able to do things like that. But I have a question specifically about the VA loan for you. When you bought the triplex, it's my understanding that when you use a VA loan, it has to be your primary residence.
You're right. So you're right.
Did you have to live there for a period of time, or what did that look like?
That's what I forgot to leave out. So it was perfect timing. So I kicked out the person in the studio.
Okay.
Because I do technically have to live in it.
Right.
But I went on deployment. So I rented it. I ended up renting out the studio anyways. And I explained to them when I came back and tried to refinance, hey, look, it's the reason why these rents, because they asked for all the leases and stuff. So I explained like, hey, I rented it out because I actually ended up going on deployment. Because after a year later, the pandemic happened. So my interest rate went from 4.5 to like 3.2. So they asked those particular questions and I had to explain them. And I legitimately did go on deployment. So yeah, for those that's listening, a VA loan for the military, if you're going to have some integrity, because I know everybody doesn't do it. They say they're going to live in there, but they don't. But if you, those of you want to have integrity with the program, definitely just live in it, use it as a house hack. And then a year later, you can use it again. Or you can save the money that you were going to usually spend for the rent you were paying to just invest in something else. So it's definitely a great starter for those. People think they have to get a single family home, but you can go up to 4 units with a VA loan.
Yeah, It's amazing. Okay, one more question about the VA loan and then we can move forward from that. If someone wanted to, if you're military and you use the VA loan and you get in, you can technically get out of the VA loan.
Yes, when you refinance.
Right, when you refinance, move it over, and then you could use the VA loan within what period of time? Is it like a year you have to wait?
It's a year. So, yeah. So the misconception is that you'll only use one at a time. You can use up to three. But so what's smart is when you refinance, let's say if you're doing this for future investing purposes and you're not trying to live in it forever, when you refinance, yes, refinance it out of the VA loan into something conventional. The interest rate may go up, but that's fine because now that relinquishes you of using one of your VA loans for someplace that you don't even live anymore. So that's what we did, refinance it, and then we put it underneath the LLC. So I just refinanced, put underneath the LLC, and then there's other stuff that comes with it, but that's pretty much how it goes.
So I'm going to hire you on the side to talk about that. So. Go ahead, Ray. What are you going to ask?
So if someone didn't have access to a VA loan, what strategies would you recommend?
I would definitely recommend the FHA loan. You know, that's 3.5% down. Or like what I mentioned before we started to show the conventional, let's say if they want to just start investing period, they already got a home, then do the conventional renovation loan. You could do the 203K loan, which is like a different version of FHA, or you could do the conventional renovation loan. And like I said, having a loan officer, I think is definitely undervalued. I would say in some cases, having a loan officer is way better than having a good real estate agent because it gets to the point where you know what you're looking for as an investor. You just need the real estate agent to really make sure to facilitate a lot of the paperwork, but you know what's in the market. You know what homes are supposed to cost. You're just saying, hey, these are the offers I have. Please put them out there. But it's that loan officer that's going to find you the great rates and dig deep for you to find a great scenario. Because I walked in trying to just do a 15% down for a conventional loan and he found a 5%. Now, the only contingency part to that is the fact that I can only do a single family home in the 5%. If I was to do a multifamily, it's going to be, I think I have to put 20% down. So it's based off whatever I'm willing to flow with at that time. And I told him like, hey, I'm just willing to just get something that cash flows this amount. And if that happens to be a single family home, then so be it. It doesn't matter. Just as long as it cash flows the right way and we have a good amount of equity in the deal.
Okay. And then, so what if someone owns a home already and then they're wanting to get started in this?
I would recommend using a HELOC. So home equity line of credit. And I say that because I'm also looking into doing it myself with one of my properties because I want to, the plan is to keep scaling, right? Because when you do one at a time, you find yourself like, all right, well, I'm doing it, but I'm not scaling very quickly because how long a reno may take 30 days or it may take 4 months, and that's one at a time. So maybe you do two or three a year, but if you have enough funds, then you could be doing two at a time and then keep on rinsing that money. So some people, they don't know. They're like, I've been in my house for 10 years. Oh, wow. Let me look and see how much equity we have. We have 100 grand. Okay. Let's talk to a local bank and try to get a home equity line of credit at, you know, maybe 5%. Because it's going to be a little bit higher than a mortgage rate. And then shop around for that to see if you get the best rate you can. And then use that money to invest. You may have enough to where you could do two at a time. People usually are sleeping on money that they don't realize they have. And without to go too deep, they can also look at their whole life insurance as well. You can use the amount of cash value in your whole life. People don't know about that too.
This is like gold you're giving people.
Seriously, this is amazing information. Wow.
Yeah. So if you've had usually it takes about 5 to 7 years for that whole life to mature and then to start asking the question, hey, what's the cash value on my life insurance? And then obviously once you use it empties it out, but definitely look into that, whatever company you're with. Cause some people got like $400,000, $1 million life insurances, whole life insurances. So wow. And paying all that money for years into it.
There are two strategies that one of them I recommended to Dominica, and one of them piggybacks on what you were just saying about the HELOC is that the first one is that what relates to your loan officer comment about being so valuable, right? So this is what I told Dominica when she was purchasing her house. And I want to see if you agree or if you've ever thought of this, is that what I found out with loans is that if you go to the loan officer and say, not just get an approval for a loan, but say, hey, I want to be actually fully underwritten so that you can go into your negotiation as if it was a cash offer.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So have you utilized that strategy?
Yeah, I'm doing that now, actually. Nice. So that's exactly what we did with my loan officer for the deal I was talking about, where I'm completely approved all the way through underwriting. It takes a little bit longer, but mm-hmm. it allows me to just now put offers in and just keep rolling.
Yeah. Then the other side is what you're talking about is that even if you're just buying a house for yourself, right? Is as soon as you are working out that deal, make sure you have a home equity line of credit opened right away. Like, don't wait for it. Make sure you have it there available, because then you can utilize that money and have it anytime you need it.
No, yeah, I can see that.
And you don't have to go back and try and go through that whole process again.
No, that actually is smart, because what is 30 to 60 days just to close on a HELOC, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, especially if it's like an emergency, or if you do want to close on a deal, because if you could buy a place in cash, it's like 7 days closing. And they're usually, if you're buying cash, somebody else is, and you're going to miss out on deals. Mm-hmm. So it is good to have that HELOC just standing by. And if you took the money out, then you're just putting the money you use and putting it back until you could find a deal that you want. Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Yeah. And then it's always available, and you can, you know, roll that, even just if it's a down payment, into another house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's there and it's, you know, waiting for you. Or if you have to do repairs or whatever, you have it available instead of like, oh, I've got to wait to get the money and go through that whole process again.
For people who aren't familiar with what HELOC means and how that works, can you explain that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So HELOC, home equity line of credit. So usually you have a, let's just say Fannie Mae or Penny Mac. Maybe the person has the first lien on my home. And so the second lien is usually your HELOC. So sometimes, especially during COVID, usually people may not take a second lien. So they may want to just buy out that first lien and then take both. But a lot of cases, most cases before last year and this year, mm-hmm. I'd have a first lien, somebody takes a second lien, HELOC, and it takes, we'll just say 60 days to close. And it is a bit of a process. And then by that time, I get $50,000 goes straight to my account. And I have a monthly payment to pay it back. I want to say you could probably stretch it out as far as like 12 years is what I've seen is like a HELOC when I asked. But it kind of works like a little bit like a mortgage. It's like a mini mortgage. We'll say it's like a mini mortgage. So we usually, if I was to consult people, I don't like, and maybe this is the investor in me, I don't like to say or use a HELOC for home improvements or for like emergencies, because the Dave Ramsey in me for budgeting, we allocate monthly for home repairs. So when something does come up, let's say if it is under insurance and I have the money for the deductible, or we just have the cash for whatever repair, so that when I want to use a HELOC, I have full range to just use it for investing. Cause I don't like to use borrowed money for expenses. Mm-hmm. I like to use borrowed money that's going to make me more money.
One of the things I should clarify about what I was saying is not just getting the money out, but an ongoing line of credit so that you are only pulling it when you need it. So you set it up so that it's available, but you only pull the money out when you need it, and you're not taking any interest until you need it.
Yeah. And that was smart too, because like just being able to fire quick off like that's actually really smart. If somebody was thinking about, okay, I want to use the HELOC, but I may not know when I may need it. Let me just take it out now. So the 60 days is going to take me. Hopefully by then I have a deal and I'm ready to fire off. So yeah.
Yeah. And to put it into like simple terms, a lot of times, like what they'll do is they'll say, okay, well, you put 20% down on your house. Well, what we'll do is we'll give you 85% of that 20% back as your potential money available.
Yes.
Yeah. So that gives you the amount of money that you can potentially utilize to work with for your next deal. So then that's really leveraging your money to work for you.
Yeah. And it's one of those hidden gems that, I mean, thanks for meetups and YouTube and, you know, virtual conversations like this, I think more and more people are finding these out, because I was talking with the person I was interviewing yesterday, how there's certain things that, you know, 10 years ago, unless you was like in the in crowd, you wouldn't even know. Like these options existed.
It's pretty mind blowing when you think about it. You're like, wow, just that simple thought of like, how much money am I actually sitting on? I don't even know about. What have I been paying into for the last however many years that I could potentially roll over and turn into some great investment?
And the banks are not going to tell you, like, hey, you know that you can use this?
Oh, heck no. They want to keep it. We're going to sit on this for you and not tell you. But something that I have to say, a little PSA on this, is if you're listening to this and you're not in a position to, take equity out of your home, like, don't do it. Like, you really need to be in a very specific situation where you're ready to make an investment or some type of investment where you're able to pull things from places. Like, if you're still, struggling to pay the mortgage for your personal home, please do not, go and make some potential mistake that could be detrimental. So just be cautious is all I'm saying.
No, I agree.
You're going to add another payment on top of it. So like, if you can't pay the mortgage payment or you're struggling there, you're not going to be able to add another payment on top of it. Right.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely don't skip the steps, which is why I'm glad I went through the Dave Ramsey phase before I went into investing phase, because I would not have been prepared to have bought a home in Los Angeles where I was at financially to then. I would have been bankrupt. Yeah.
Right.
So knowledge is power. That's for sure.
Regarding some of the debt stuff, can we talk about like the mortgage side of stuff? Cause that is always a big topic that people don't want to talk about, is how much money actually goes out to paying a mortgage and how much goes out to interest rate. Cause we talk about interest rates being like 3%, 4%. But when you actually do the math, how much actually goes out to that?
Principal versus,
you want to talk about a little bit about that?
Yeah. So kind of an easy way to see is your amortization table. Mm-hmm. You usually get that at closing. I think sometimes some people may get it in the mail after they close on a house. And you can see how little in the beginning goes towards your principal the first 10 years of your mortgage. These banks or anybody, these loan companies, they want to get their money in the upfront. So they take pretty much most of the interest is upfront. They get a lot of their money probably the first 15 years. You're probably really not making a big dent until halfway through the mortgage. And then that's when you really see how much is really going towards your principal. So usually your mortgage is like, let's say $600. Then you have your interest, which will be another $250. And then your taxes would be like $250. And then your insurance is like another $250. So that's when you'll see, oh, my mortgage is $900, but my complete mortgage is actual $900, but the actual, what the home loan or principal is like $600. So out of that, let's say when I pay my $900, you'll see on your statement, oh, $250 goes to insurance, $250 goes to taxes. And then the $600 that's left, okay, $400 went towards interest and $200 went towards the actual principal. That's kind of how the mortgage works. When you're an investor, you want to do your own underwriting. You want to look and see, all right, if I buy this home and I put this particular amount of money down, there's so many calculators out there, by the way, I'm going to see how much that mortgage is going to be. This is the max amount of rents I can charge. And that's if these apartments are looking great. So you want to kind of be a little nice or nicer on what your rent is going to be, because trying to max out what the rent is in that market and then your home still looks like the 1990s, you're not going to get max rent. So probably bump it down to the 50, 60 bucks. And then compare that to what your potential expenses are. You can look up, you can call the city that property is in and ask for the water bill for the last 6 months and see what happens over there. Because sometimes if your water meters are not split, and this is for multifamilies, single family homes, you could probably squeeze it into where that family, whoever moves in that house, that pays for the water. But for these multifamilies, a lot of, especially the older ones, they don't have split meters. So you as an owner has to pay for that water bill, because unless you either have built in your own meter and that's like a $10,000 deal, or split the tap at the water line, which is, it's still an expense as well, then you're not allowed to charge for water. Because you can't sit here and say, let's say you have a duplex to make it easy. Well, I could tell that you use $60 worth of water and you use $50 worth of water. That's not how it works. It's just one house that happens to be split in half, but it has one water meter. So you want to count all those things into consideration, including the mortgage, so that you know you're getting a good deal.
I'm so wildly inspired right now. I'm like thinking about going on Zillow really quick. I'm like, okay, let's look for something right now.
Okay. But speaking of that, are there certain markets that are working better right now, or certain things that you're looking for? Like say, like we talked about the 1% rule, but are there certain things that, the market's just been absolutely weird and nuts and overbidding and stuff for homes, like how are you managing that?
So that's a great question, man. So I've been talking to my wife about that because it has gotten very hard to find the 1% rule, which is why I switched over to doing the BRRRR strategy, because that's the only way I've been able to find it in my local area in order to get above the 1%. I don't feel like it's worth it, the headache, getting anything lower than 1%, because if you're banking on equity, that's a gamble. You're gambling on appreciation. If you just buy a house straight up. We got lucky. Anybody that bought a bad deal in 2019, they got lucky in 2020 and 2021 because the pandemic ended up making it to where the homes now end up being worth 30, 40% more than what they were 2 years ago. Even me, I bought a deal that wasn't the best, and I'm selling it because I made a profit so that I can get a better deal. So the markets that I have realized that are good, and once I feel comfortable that I can have a team, because that's the biggest thing. Who's your boots on ground? Do you have to micromanage them? Because if you have to micromanage somebody 1,000 miles away, you're gonna be pulling your hair out. I'd rather micromanage somebody that's 15 minutes down the road, because there's been plenty of times that I physically go to my property manager's office and can talk to him because you're not answering the phone, or whatever the case may be. By the way, I'm letting them go. I'm just doing it myself in a couple of months, because imagine going through that down, you know, let's say Florida. And I like Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville, Florida is really good. It's one of the few places that's still over the 1% rule. Detroit, Michigan. Mm-hmm. That's one I would have to fly out to physically see play, because that is almost a war zone currently. But I could buy a 10 unit for 100 grand.
Right.
That's awesome. I can definitely get me and one other person to do that, and we'll renovate it. But it needs a lot of TLC. It needs a lot of supervision, right? So that's where it has been very helpful to network, and has been very helpful on my podcast, because you do end up interviewing people, or you do end up seeing people meetups that happen to be in Detroit or Jacksonville, Florida. And or they may not be in there, but they invest out there and they do have boots on ground. And that provides that business more business. So Jacksonville, Florida, Detroit, and I found out recently Idaho is booming. A lot of people from California are investing in Idaho.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're looking at. Well, but that leads me to another question, though, just based on your experience, do you think that we're going to, you know, it's going to bubble out, the market bursts, and now we're just going to be back down to reality, so to speak? Like, do you see that coming in the next like weeks, months, years? What's your take on that?
So if you would have asked me a year ago, yes, I would have thought that, because it just kind of looked very weird. It's an awkward situation for investors, because I'm looking at the pandemic, people are not able to pay rent. So that means landlords are not going to be able to pay their mortgages. So I'm waiting for the fallout, right? Because 40% of the homes that are owned in the United States, or investment properties, are mom and pops. And it's unrealistic to ask a landlord to have more than 12 months worth of mortgage saved up, which has been what has been happening with these, you know, the rent moratorium, or people just not paying their rent. So I thought there was going to be a fallout, and there hasn't been. And so now the way I look at it is there has been a slip. Like, it is not, even for my primary home that I'm selling right now, 3 months ago, I could have sold it for 15 grand more, but now it's kind of slipped back. It's definitely still about 30 grand more than what it should be, or what it would have been in 2019. Or even last year, but it is starting to slip. So I don't think it's a bubble. I think we're not going to see what we used to see 2 years ago. There's places that I could have renovated for 15 grand. It would have took me 30 days, and I would have bought it for 40 grand. But now those 40 grand homes are now being sold for 60, and I don't see them going back. I think, and also rents have increased, and I don't see those going back as well.
Let's talk about rent increase for a minute and renters' rights and all of that. So my husband and I still own our home in California, currently renting it out. And it's really uncomfortable and daunting to go through that process of like finding the right people or person to rent the space. Have you experienced or come across just a real lame renter where you had to kick them out, or has there been
Yes. Sheesh, there's been a few, because I got to see people's real intentions during COVID on what they were willing to see if they got away with. I'm a very intrusive and involved either leader or business owner. So a lot of landlords, they are investing out of state. or they don't drive by. I drive by my properties a lot, at least probably once a month. And I'm usually very quick to either call the city and say, hey, look, y'all left this stuff on my yard. What's going on? Like, that's the type of person I am. And so, you know, I started communicating with my property manager. I'm like, hey, look, what happened with the disbursements? It's a little low. What's going on? He sends me an email saying people are not paying their rent. I had two different property managers. One told the tenants that rent was canceled and you don't have to pay rent, which I think he just had a vendetta against me, because me and him bump heads a lot, because I know what right looks like. And so even though you manage it for me, I still manage you. And so if I did the research and know that this is the right thing to do, this is how we're supposed to be managing these properties, you know, you shouldn't be getting petty and affecting people financially. And then the other property manager, he's very passive. So I need somebody that's kind of in the middle. I need somebody that is maybe not as intrusive and in this stuff like I am. Like, I'm very on it, because I want him to be, I want somebody to feel like when they are talking to a tenant, the tenant feels like they have their back. And it's like, I care. I guess it's the military side of me that makes me very like, right? So,
hey, clear boundaries though, right?
Yeah. So I need somebody kind of in the middle of that. But, and that's been the process itself, finding a good property manager. So it forced me to get a bit personable, sit down with the tenants and say, hey, what's going on? Like, really, what's going on? Are you really in a financial situation? If you are, let's figure this out. And so 60% of my tenants, I got on rental assistance programs. I physically was going to the homes, talking to them, getting them caseworkers. We're filling out the paperwork, and we've got, I would probably say about 12 months I've gotten paid through the city or nonprofit organizations for my renters. So I didn't really feel the pinch that a lot of landlords felt, because there were billions of dollars that were provided for people for rental assistance programs that weren't really tapped into. I think there was still billions of dollars left over. So it was interesting, and it was a entrepreneurial pivot I had to make in order to still survive, because I refused to pay these mortgages out of my own pocket.
Well, yeah.
So I was like, there's got to be a way.
It says a lot about you as an individual and your leadership and your experience to basically hold their hands and say, listen, I got you. Let's figure this out together. That's amazing. I imagine that from that experience, they will be very, hopefully, be very good tenants for a long time for you, because I have never heard of any other tenant going through that process and making sure everyone.
I will say this. It's funny you say that. I still have to be a business person, right?
Of course.
A businessman. So I will help you through, let's say, the remainder of the lease. And the funny thing was that a lot of them had signed up in March of 2020, which is right when things popped off, right? No. So I'm like, I got a whole 12 months with them and I can't kick them out. So what I had told them was, hey, I will help you with these programs and we'll make it all the way up until March of 2021. But you have to show me and your caseworker that you're trying to find a job. Mm-hmm. If you do not, then I will not renew the lease with you. And so that's what I did. There's only one that's left from March, and she's been a holdover tenant. And so she's been paying 150% of the rent, because when you're a holdover tenant, that's how much you pay. But it's been still through the city, because I'm still trying to be, you know, I have some humanity, and I'm trying to help her transition to another city through another landlord. But yeah, I had to let them go, because it is not in my best interest to hold your hand from lease to lease, like every year, help you pay your rent. That's
not your job.
I did this out of necessity, but I do not plan to do this long term. But I have no problem helping people find programs, but I need you to kind of do the legwork. So I did it out of necessity and really sat down and talked with you and be personable. But you got to show me that you're an adult, because if I'm 30 and I feel like I'm paying my bills, then why are you my age or older and you feel like you shouldn't have to pay yours?
Because COVID, man, right?
Yeah.
I feel bad for a lot of landlords, that because a lot of this money, I think it said about $10 billion is unpaid in rent. A lot of these landlords are not going to recover that. I have about $15,000 that I still need to recover in court. And I know when I go to court in November, I'm probably going to recover $8,000, maybe nine. And so, you know, I had to talk to a couple of guys that were, you know, coming to me complaining about it. A couple of guys I've even interviewed. And I was like, hey, go still try to fight for it. But I know lawyers are expensive. So I would advise people, find a lawyer that will not charge you until they actually get the money. So I have a lawyer that he will take a third of the profit. So I know that that's very steep, and it's probably not as expensive as if you was just to pay him out. But I don't want to pay $1,500 for possible money versus, okay, maybe I get $9,000 and I got paid $3,000, but it's at least I know it's guaranteed I'm going to get my money. So I don't mind doing it that way. So I was telling him, just one of the guys I was talking to, like, just ask a lawyer that does that, either a flat rate or, hey, one third of what you do. Cause, you know, anybody that's had a lawyer knows that these hours rack up on you if you do it hourly.
Yeah.
When I was in a, I was in a car accident when I was 18, and I had to sue the insurance company to actually get paid for the medical. And that was the same situation. I just worked it out with the lawyer. I was just like, you know, I don't know what they're going to pay out for this, but you work it out. You'll get a third. The doctor's going to get a third and I'll get a third. And that worked out really well.
Yeah.
Same exact scenario for me. Only I was 19 with my car accident. Seriously, same exact scenario. Yeah. The guy was like, pro bono, and then we'll figure it out and I'll take a third.
Oh, cool.
Great. I'm not, that sounds good to me, as long as I don't have to pay anything up front. So yeah. How did we get on this topic? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, we ended up talking about renters, bad renters.
Bad renters. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm so bad sorry. Renters
ends up in lawyers getting paid. Is that
pretty much, man.
It's expensive. All of it's just darn expensive. And it's not like the lender or the mortgage company is like, oh yeah, you don't have to pay. It's okay. No, I mean, it's at the end of the day, the homeowner is stuck holding the bag and it's brutal. Yeah.
Well, one part I forgot to bring up is about, well, before you even get to having a bad tenant, screen properly, don't rush. And I know that's easier said than done because you have a mortgage, right? So one thing that I will say is that when you have the opportunity to be patient, it's so much leverage and power in that, because you get a lot more selective. And so it's to the point now with our business where we have one family that I provided them an offer. Hey, you know, extra $70. I increased the rent by like $70 because I want them to move out. But if they decide to do it, then obviously they're going to pay that increase, because I'm basically having you pay me for the headache that you are, kind of. Right. So, but I'm okay with them not staying and leaving because I have enough reserves to get me through the fall, because the fall is the worst time trying to get a new tenant. And so when you get in those positions to have the opportunity to really be selective, that's when you're in a good sweet spot. And, you know, to be honest with you, the tenants are not bad. It's just that they're always late. They're always like a week or two late. And unless I text them or through the portal, because I have like tenant portals, which makes it very convenient. Unless I text them through that, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll do it next week. And they always pay the late fee too. They always pay the late fee. It's like they're completely fine with paying the rent, late fee, and it's every month.
Wow.
I'm dumbfounded. Really?
Yeah, I don't know what their deal is, but it's funny. I'm not the only one that I find out that runs into that. I have another guy that he does single family homes only, and he said that he's had these family for like 3 years, and he said they're always late, but they always pay. And he said he just tolerates them because they always pay.
That's so bizarre. Yeah, I guess at this point, it's like, well, if they're paying, I mean, that's the deal. If they're at least paying, then okay. Because there's so many that just aren't right now.
But again, like, I'm big on streamlining things. So like, if I set up the tenant portal for you, and when you put in your repairs, you can go ahead and put that in, and I shoot out text messages or phone calls. Like, I like to have everything streamlined. And one thing I don't like to see is when I look at the portal, oh, they're 10 days late. That's more time now I got to do and it's not worth, to me, it's not worth the amount of rent that they pay. I'm just like, I'd rather just find somebody that's qualified and just pay it. And I don't have to worry about, only thing I worry about is the disbursement when they put in the repairs. But generally they've been okay. They've been okay tenants. The only thing they've ever called me about was the light went out and they got mad because I had to install a small water heater in one of their closets because the house only had one water heater for three apartments. And yeah, horrible. So I had to pay like $10,000 to get three new water heaters. But the problem is, where are you going to put them? And they all couldn't go inside the convenient closet. They had like a little like a auxiliary closet in the back of the house. So I had to put it somewhere else. In hindsight, I did find out where I could have put in it, but it was too late. So they got really mad about that. And I understood because it took up space in one of the closets, but now they have hot water.
I know, closet space, hot water. I mean, you know, gotta weigh those options. That's funny, because when we rented our place out in California, and for the first week and a half, we didn't know this. The hot water heater went out on the renters. They didn't tell us.
That happens too.
Like, why didn't you tell us? Well, we didn't want to fuss. When did this happen? Like today? Well, we didn't want to bother you. Like you bother me. Like that's, you're supposed to. And like, or bother the person that's handling the property. Then 2 weeks later, the stove dies. Instead of calling the property manager, they just went and bought a new stove and they took a picture of the receipt. And they're like, just letting you know that this is what's in the house. We hope that's okay. We'll put your stove in the garage. Thanks. They didn't ask to have us reimburse them. It was the weirdest thing. I'm like, who does that? Who buys a major appliance and sticks it in the rental?
That's actually a nice scenario. I actually put it in my leases. I put it in my lease that I don't want them doing that because
it could be dangerous.
Know, well, yeah. So I don't want, I know if my machinery or appliances explode or whatever, then it's on me. Then I know it's my situation. But when you start putting, they start putting their own things in there, I don't know what they're doing with it. And then let's just say it explodes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and then that's also too why you want renter insurance. Make sure they have renter's insurance.
100%. If you've learned nothing from this episode, make sure they have renter's insurance. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. This has been so fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because talking to y'all, I realized like, oh, this is all the information I'd be having bottled up in my head. I talk my wife's head off, you know, about all my ideas and like what we're doing the next. And I do appreciate because I probably babble to her a lot. She's like, midnight, Anthony, and you're excited about this new idea.
Yeah.
It's time to go to sleep, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're welcome.
My wife's the same way.
Is she? Really?
Why? Well, it's because I'm always...
She babbles at you stuff. Or you babble at her?
I'm always babbling at her. And then okay. She's like, okay, you got to stop.
These things are exciting. And that's why we are blessed enough to have these podcast platforms so that we can do this with like-minded entrepreneurs and business owners. Anthony, how can people get in contact with you if they want to follow your journey and chit-chat with you?
You can check out the Rich State of Mind podcast. It's on major platforms. We're also on YouTube as well. It's about episode 54. Right now. So very excited about that. We hit like a 1 year mark with that. We just found out we're in the top 10% globally in podcasts. So wow. That was a surprise. One of my friends actually sent me the link. Like, hey bro, check this out. Cause I wasn't even tracking it. So me and him in a slight competition actually. And it's funny cause it's like, I'm writing a book. He's like, well, I'm writing two. So me and him always go back and forth. Also, you can find me on Instagram. That's rich_invest_ or Rich State of Mind page. That's the Rich State of Mind Instagram page. And we also have a Facebook group and like page, which is just Rich State of Mind. And, or you can email me at richstateofmind1@gmail.com. And so that's how you can find out what we're doing. And also our website as well, richstateofmind.com. You see the blogs that we have. You can also look at the podcast and the blog and our resource page. I actually pride myself in the resource page more than anything because I try to add different content that I think would be helpful to people that want to budget, buy homes, or invest. And then it really goes to other people's pages, really backlinks to other people's pages, calculated stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to put all the links in the show notes. You're just a wealth of information. It's really been awesome to have you on the show. So thank you. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Domenica, because I enjoy talking to you on my channel.
Yeah. And so
thanks for inviting me because I knew it was going to be a blast talking to you.
Awesome. All right, guys, that's it for this one. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.